Good morning. Last week, Peter's sermon told you about Jesus' baptism and how this was really the beginning of his ministry. So this week, we're going to talk about his first miracle. But before I get started, I'd like you to think about a time when maybe you wanted to do something but didn't think you were quite ready. For me, it was going from a two-wheel bike with training wheels to a two-wheel bike without training wheels. Even though my dad had raised the training wheels, and I was really just sailing along on two big wheels, I just knew that if he took those training wheels off, it was curtains for Joe. Maybe for you, it was going for a new job that was a little out of your reach, trying a new recipe that was a little bit challenging for you. Maybe it was giving a speech in front of a large audience, or taking that first solo trip after you lost your partner. Or maybe it was signing up for Match.com after a few years of being alone. It could be almost anything. So put that in the back of your mind while I ramble on. If you heard me preach over the summer, you'll recall that I talked about the Jewish biblical interpretation called Midrash, where a rabbi interprets the Bible in four different ways. The first way is the straightforward or obvious meaning of the reading, or hearing the story exactly as it's written. The second way is trying to connect that reading to any other text. This is a little more challenging. Third way, and this is my favorite, is imagining a plausible story based on the reading and our knowledge of history and circumstances of the time. This relies not only on familiarizing yourself with other writings, but it also requires a vivid imagination. I call this the Cecil B. DeMille exercise. And the fourth is doing the moral or mystical interpretation, or as I believe, determining where this reading is trying to take you. But the Jews weren't the only ones who did this type of biblical interpretation. In the Christian tradition, theologians do an allegorical interpretation, where there are also four methods. First one, same as Midrash, is understanding the text exactly as it was written. Second, it's called the typological interpretation, or in this case, tying the events to either events in the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible, or other events in the New Testament. This is similar to Midrash's step two. Step three is the moral interpretation, which is really step four in Midrash, but it's pretty much the same, understanding the story as a directive on how you should act now. And the fourth, and this is what deviates a little bit from Midrash, is the future or anagogic interpretation, sometimes referred to as the mystical interpretation, or understanding the story as it relates to what is yet to be. Yet to be. There was a Latin rhyme designed to help scholars remember the four interpretations that survived from the Middle Ages. And this rhyme goes like this. Litera gesta docet, quid credis allegoria, moralis quid agas, quotendis anagogia. And I know you all know what that means. But if you don't, if you missed Latin in school, which I did, it means the literal teaches what God and our ancestors did. The allegory is where our faith and belief is hid. The moral meaning gives us the rule of daily life, and the anagogy shows us where we end our strife. So I'm going to use this method to interpret the story of the wedding at Cana. So let's start with step one. The literal teaches what God and our ancestors did, or the straightforward meaning of this story. Since it's a short reading, I will reiterate parts of it. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there, Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now standing there were six stone jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons of water. So let me stop here and point out to you that that is somewhere between 120 to 180 gallons of water, soon to be 120 to 180 gallons of wine. Even at our biggest party, we could not put away 120 or 180 gallons of wine. I think that might take two parties at least. Continuing the reading, the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first, and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. So the story here is not only was this Jesus' first miracle, but he was reinforcing in the minds of his disciples, and it turns out the servants who fetched the water for him, that he was the disciple who he said he was. And the belief in this literal story, the meaning of this literal story, I believe, is just that, believe. Then on to the second step. The allegory is where our faith and belief is hid. Or where can I find other hidden stories similar to this? Well, I can loosely tie today's gospel to today's Psalm 36, specifically verses 8 and 9, which speaks of abundance and favor and the well of life, which is Jesus himself. "They feast upon the abundance of your house. You give them drink from the river of your delights. For with you is the well of life, and in your light we see light." Besides the psalm, I can also connect this story to today's reading from 1 Corinthians. "Now there are a variety of gifts, but the same Spirit, and there are varieties of services, but the same Lord, and there are varieties of activities, but it is the same God who activates all of them in everyone. To each is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. To one is given through the Spirit the utterance of wisdom. To another, the utterance of knowledge according to the same Spirit. To another, faith by the same Spirit. To other, gifts of healing by the one Spirit. And to another, the working of miracles." And it goes on. Okay, so we know that Jesus' gift was the working of a miracle. But I believe there was another gift that we're seeing in this reading. And that's Mary's gift of encouragement, of her belief in her son, of her faith. Remember, Jesus said to his mother, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." And without hesitating, Mary took those training wheels off when she turned to the servants and said, "Do whatever he tells you." I think we need to give Mary a significant amount of credit for her son's first miracle. I wonder if Mary hadn't given Jesus a little shove, a little encouragement, would he have performed this first miracle? Go, Mary. This takes us to the third interpretation. The moral meaning gives us the rule of daily life. And that's the moral interpretation, or understanding the story as a directive for how we should act now. So, after reading this gospel and digging a little deeper into it, I have a new mantra, which is, be the Mary. Be the one who encourages others to take off the training wheels. go for a new job, try a new recipe, stand up in front of an audience and give that speech. Be the one who has confidence in others and in yourself. Be the Mary. And then we come to the fourth step. The anagogy shows us where we end our strife, which is the future interpretation. This one's a little bit more difficult because who can predict the future? Did Mary know when she told her those servants to do what her son directed? Did she know what the future held in store for her son? If she had known, would she have encouraged him? So for me, when I look at this story and its indications for the future, it's telling me that there will always be suffering. But it's also telling me that above else, all else, God has a plan, and the ending will be good. Just as the wedding at Cana had a good ending. Remember, the best wine was saved until last. Which takes me back to my early assignment for you. So have you remembered a time when you wanted to do something but didn't think you were quite ready? Did someone encourage you? Maybe you found that encouragement within yourself. Did you succeed? I did. I'm no longer afraid to ride a bicycle without training wheels. When I was working, I did go for jobs that were little and sometimes a lot out of my reach. I tried new recipes, and there are no bodies that I know of. I took that first solo trip, and I did sign up for Match.com, and I met my husband, and we've now been married for 20 years. And I thank God I had Marys all along the way. I had lots of Marys who encouraged me. So now I intend to be the Mary, mainly for others, but sometimes for myself. And I encourage you to do the same. Be the Mary. Today's gospel message, or the rule of life. Be the Mary. Amen.